The book nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Robert Craze. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Vic. It's good to be back. How you doing?
Bob, I'm so happy that you have a new book out. In fact, today is the day that you're starting your big book tour, isn't it?
Yeah, today's the book came out just after Christmas. But because of the lull between Christmas and New Year, the industry kind of went to sleep. But now we're after the first, and we're charging into 2018, and I'm beginning a coast-to-coast tour this evening.
I'm not sure if the industry is awake, Bob, but I think that your book might wake up some people. It's called The Wanted, and it's the newest Elvis Cole, Joe Pike novel. This partnership between Elvis and Joe continues.
Well, it does. I mean, it's the 17th Elvis Cole novel. It's my 21st novel altogether, the 17th Elvis Cole novel. I love these guys. I'm fascinated by them. In The Wanted, Elvis meets a single mother with a teenage son, she's at wit's end. You know, here's her son, and he's one of those kids that he's been a loner. He's socially awkward. Never had a whole lot of play dates, we might say. Mm-hmm. And then one day she walks into his room, but a good kid. But then one day she walks into his room, and it's like walking into the ground floor at Neiman's. I mean, you know, here he has a closet filled with $200 shirts and, you know, a $3,000 sport coat. She digs around his room, and, you know, she finds, a $40,000 Rolex. And she's shocked, and she says, what is this? Where are you getting this stuff? We don't have this kind of money. And of course, he's a 17-year-old boy. He lies, and she knows he's lying, but you know, she's become terrified. I mean, in her mind, the only place he can be getting this money is if he's, you know, involved in something dangerous and criminal. So what does she do? She turns to the world's greatest detective for help, and that would be Elvis Cole.
She doesn't mention that she finds his stash, his wads of cash, and the kid doesn't even have a job, does he?
No, and what makes this all the more unexpected is because to her he's always been a sweet kid, a good kid, you know, shy and awkward, and never had many friends. So this is just a complete change, something that's unknown and terrifying. Only, she doesn't realize as yet just how terrifying it actually is going to be. And that's why she needs the help of someone like Elvis Cole. And for Elvis, I realized something with the book. I mean, you know, I just sketched out, okay, that's the premise for the story. And Elvis Cole, the private investigator, of course, will attempt to help this woman and her son. But I realized that over the course of the 17 novels, you know, each of the books can be read on its own. Each of the books, involves a client and a situation that Elvis has to somehow write. But really, the books are never really about those clients. I mean, yes, they are, but what the books are really about, and this is the reason I think there's 17 of them and why I continue to write them. The books are really about Elvis Cole. The clients come and go. Mm-hmm. And they do have important stories to tell. But the books, each and every one are about who Elvis Cole is as a man and how that man changes and how the clients change him and how they bring his truth to the surface. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't realize that until I was well into the series. But, you know, this book is no exception. This book is about, you know, Elvis is single. He's not married. And this book really is about his desire for a family. Mm. You know, he would like to be married. He would like to have kids. He's come close a couple of times, but it hasn't happened. Yet there's some deep part of him that yearns for that. So within this story, I mean, think about who these clients are. Here's this woman. She's single. She has a child. Here's the boy. He's the son surrogate. And Elvis gets to step into that, you know, that dynamic with them. And I found that a very, you know, particularly moving and touching theme throughout the course of the book, and very, very powerful for me to write about and for Elvis Cole to experience.
Elvis has the best cat in the world. Who needs kids? My guest is Robert Craze. His book is The Wanted. Bob, I think the first time I had you on the program, it's probably been 20 years ago, you were still with Hyperion. So when was that, late 90s?
I think it was the late 90s, yeah, and I remember the book. It was, I believe, my fifth novel, and it was a book titled Voodoo River, and I think that was our first interview together.
You're right, and you came out here to Yellow Springs. Okay, we've got probably half a dozen listeners out there who have never heard of you, and they've never heard of Elvis Cole. You keep talking about Elvis Cole. Who is he?
He's a private investigator based out of Los Angeles. He's a military combat veteran, he is a writer of wrongs, an outlier who has a moral code, and he's the guy you want as your best friend.
And who is his friend, Joe Pike?
Joe's a little more difficult to explain. They're partners and friends. Joe is an ex-combat Marine. He's an ex-police officer, LAPD officer. And then he spent about 15 years as a military contractor, also known as a mercenary, in hotspots all over the world. Whereas Elvis is funny and verbal, Joe says very, very little. Yet they trust each other implicitly, and they have a relationship, I think, that perhaps only the very closest of brothers can have, and Joe indeed is someone everybody needs a friend like Joe Pike, and that's and his role in the books is not only to help Elvis, especially when things get tough and the going gets violent, but also, I think, as a moral sounding board for Elvis Cole. Joe is a man, even when he's silent, helps Elvis work out his direction and his his direction and his ethical responsibilities.
Over the last several books, Joe has taken on a bigger role. In fact, he actually was the main man in one of the books. In this one, he's kind of back in the periphery a little bit. Elvis takes more of a lead role in this one. And we know, though, that when it comes to crunch time, Joe will be on the scene. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I heard that you went to a writers' festival in Belfast, Northern Ireland last year.
That is true.
And I heard
Moreland was the first international crime writing conference. It was held in Belfast, Ireland. It was a fantastic experience.
I heard you were on stage and they were doing a Q&A, and someone asked you, if it's coming down to Joe Pike versus Jack Reacher, who wins? Is this true, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I get that. I get asked that a lot. And because Joe's a tough guy, and Jack Reacher is certainly a large tough, capable fighter.
Uh-huh.
And so people who read both myself and Lee Child, and there are many, many people who read both of us, you know, they like to have this debate. And I've been asked that question a million times. You know, who's the you know, who would win if Jack Reacher and Joe Pike fought? And to me, the answer is obvious. it's this. Jack Reacher is Joe Pike's bitch.
Ooh. Okay. Well, you know, I had Lee on recently for the Midnight Line, and I did not mention this to him.
Lee knows what my answer is,
yeah.
And I got a feeling I know what Lee's answer is, too.
My guess is Robert Craze, whose book is The Wanted. You have such wonderful villains, and in this one, these two hitmen, they are so entertaining. They are just despicable and lethal. But as readers, because they are so well portrayed, we kind of actually grow fond of these killers.
I hate one-note villains. I mean, in the past, I have occasionally, I think maybe, certainly the minor character villains, you know, tend to be flat because they don't have much screen time, as it were.
Uh-huh.
But I like interesting villains. I like multi-dimensional villains, and in this case, as we've been talking, there's Elvis Cole and Joe Pike. They're partners, and I wanted to as the nemesis in the book, the antagonist in the book, to have a duo. You know, sort of like the flip side of Elvis and Joe, and there are many similarities that in the underlying base of these guys. You know, they Harvey and Stems. We gather because of the way I've laid out the scenes in the books. I mean, these guys have spent a lot of time together. They have a history. They're very comfortable and familiar with each other. They've worked together a long time. Only they're homicidal maniacs. I mean, but I wanted them fully fleshed. I mean, they don't just walk into a scene and start bashing heads and killing people. You know, they have the kind of conversation that any two people who have a history together and have other interests, they have other interests in their lives. They talk about those things just like, anyone else would do. And I found them fascinating. Once I got into the characters, when I was writing the Harvey and Stem scenes, I just let them talk.
Uh-huh.
And it was great because some of the things, I mean, here are these guys, and they are the bad guys, and they are murderers. But they would talk about everyday things. Some of the things they would say would make me laugh. Other things they would say would make me cringe. Every time I wrote them, I found them interesting and fascinating. So they're a blast. They're also two of the most dangerous characters I've ever written.
That's all true. So how does that happen for you? Do you just sit there in your little garret and you hear their voices? How does it work for you?
Eventually I hear the characters' voices, usually when I'm off on medications. but you know, what happens is character creation typically, like anything else, you know, I'm not one of those guys who just cranks it out. I'm also not one of those guys who writes by magic, which, you know, when I started this gig a long time ago, I thought that book writers simply sat down at a desk with their quill pen and table, and their eyes rolled back in their heads, and they just started scribbling. It was like automatic writing. And then, you know, this went on for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, and finally you'd come to your senses, and there would be this completed book, and it would just appear. No, it's a lot of roll-up-your-sleeves hard work, and I'm a blue-collar writer that way. So when I'm creating characters or recreating them, as I do every time I write a new Elvis Cole novel, you know, I think about them a lot. I feel my way through it. Maybe I write little snatches of dialogue or little bits of scenes until something starts to feel alive for me and really hook me in and feel interesting. And in the case of Harvey and Stems, you know, once I knew I wanted two guys, I wanted that sort of the antithesis of Elvis and Joe. Harvey actually, one of them came first, and when he started to talk, I immediately knew how the other man would respond.
Mm.
And then I just let it play out. Those guys, they just came to life as a natural pair, just the way Elvis and Joe came to life as a natural pair. And after that, I just hung on and let them do their thing, and it was just an amazing experience to be with them.
I had James Lee Burke on the show the other day again, and he has roots in Louisiana, as you do, and you two guys have the most appearances to date on this program. And I have to think, there's something about the storytellers from Louisiana that must really appeal to me. Of course, you're associated with Los Angeles, and you have been for many years. And when you first went out there, it was to get into screenwriting. You wrote for a lot of big TV shows. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got into this?
Sure. You know, I did grow up in Louisiana, and I started writing back home in Louisiana. I started as a short story writer. I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write everything. You know, I was writing short stories, sold a few of those, but I would have been happy writing Marvel comic books or, you know, movies, TVs, plays. I just wanted to write, you know. But I also wanted to make a living at it, and at the time, this was in the late 70s, when I looked around at the opportunity, well, how can I make a living at this? Since, by the way, the most I've ever been paid for a short story is $135.
Mm.
And the answer seemed to be to go to Los Angeles, where they made television shows and movies. And I didn't know anything about it, but I packed up and moved to L.A., taught myself how to write screenplays, and began submitting them. And lo and behold, a short order, a television script I had written sold, then the next, and then I was hired and on staff. And now, you know, I think of myself as a baby writer back then because I was so young, but I'm more like a Trivial Pursuit question for 80s TV. You know, I wrote for a lot of cop shows that you've heard. I wrote for Beretta, Quincy, Hill Street Blues, Cagney and Lacey, The Equalizer, Miami Vice. You know, it just goes on and on like that. But it was a great opportunity to learn because I worked with some super talented people. And believe me, I was a magnet for soaking up every good lesson I could from the masters who I worked with.
Bob, as we're recording this last week, we lost a writer who was originally from the South, from Louisville, and she's very much associated with Southern California, and she almost made it to...
Yeah, I know. I'm still heartbroken.
She almost made it to the end of the alphabet, Sue Grafton. What are your thoughts about her?
I loved Sue. I mean, she was... When I sold and published my first novel, The Monkey's Raincoat, Sue Grafton was one of the first people I met. She, I believe she was on her fifth book, E,
uh-huh.
And she could not have been more generous, more friendly, more kind, more supportive. We had a little something in common at the time. You know, Sue was also had also written television,
mm-hmm.
And so we shared, you know, stories of our various experiences together. You know, not all of which is pleasant. I mean, you know, we were both writing or attempting to write books for a reason. You know, we that was our ultimate dream, and but you know, so she would I just think she went out of her way to be generous to a young writer who appreciated all those contacts. She was just a true lady and one of the kindest, most generous people I've ever known. And And that was, by the way, at E, that's more or less at the beginning of her career, too. She hadn't yet exploded to become the superstar writer that people know of as Sue Grafton, you know, who wrote the Alphabet series. That came like two or three or four books later. But she's just always been such a wonderful presence in the mystery community and crime community. She'll just be missed forever. She was a giant then. She's a giant now. She's going to be a giant forever.
Well, there's a word that's overused, but I think it really applies to her, and I try not to overuse the word because I think it really fits her. She was nice.
Yeah.
So nice.
Really was.
Yeah.
Really was. Well, I mean, I'm at a loss and even choking up even thinking about it. I mean, she just epitomized all the good elements that any human being could embody, as far as I'm concerned, and she will be missed.
My guest is Robert Craze. His new Elvis Cole, Joe Pike novel is The Wanted. We gave them a little glimpse of what the story starts out like. You're talking about this kid who's in trouble. His mom's concerned. She calls in Elvis Cole. You mentioned this kid doesn't play well, doesn't have many playmates. But he does have one former playmate who is my favorite character, and that's a guy named Carl. I love Carl.
Thank you. I do, too. Well, Carl, who, by the way, calls himself the Carl, is like the other young man in the book, socially awkward. Only in the Carl's case, he may well be a computer or internet genius. Mm-hmm. He codes his own. He codes his own video games. He can hack video games. He can hack into things. He has a computer business, and I deeply loved writing him. In many ways, I identified him. He's the Carl is that geeky kid that we all knew in grade school or junior high school, who never quite fit in, always was on the outside. Only in the Carl's case, those things may be true, but he also has this amazing gift with all things computational.
Mm-hmm.
So when we meet him, not only was he Tyson Connor's good friend, but the Carl is able to supply some absolutely essential help to Elvis Cole. And I love the fact that the Carl was able to help. I love the fact that Elvis Cole, my heroic detective, has to turn to this, this geeky, nerdy, lonely kid, and that lonely kid is able to be a part of the winning team.
Okay, you mentioned his friend Tyson, the kid that's in trouble. Are you going to say what he's into, or are they going to have to read the book to figure out what he's into?
Well, no, we can say that. When Devin Connor is Tyson's mother, and when she first discovers the expensive shirts and the sport, $3,000 sport coat and a cash and a Rolex and all the stuff in his room, her first reaction, and I think probably most parents would fear this too with a teenage boy, somehow he's got involved in drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he's dealing drugs, or he's with the drug dealers, and all this. But in point of fact, Tyson and a couple of friends are burglarizing homes. They're burglarizing, rich people
mm-hmm.
who live in the Hollywood Hills, Beverly Hills, the Brentwood Hills, all the wealthier hillside neighborhoods in Los Angeles. Now, it takes no great criminal mastermind to do this. In fact, Los Angeles, going back for as long as I researched this, always has multiple burglary crews or burglars working nonstop. Some of greater success, others of lesser success. The Hillside Burglars were a professional crew who robbed houses for 3 years. Huge celebrity names, movie studio heads, athletes, and got away with robbed over 150 homes. All the way to, you know, one-shot people who just walk into houses and steal things through, and a lot of people have heard of this because of the movie, there was a group of kids called the Bling Ring who used to hit celebrities like Paris Hilton and all this other stuff. Now, why it doesn't take, professional thieves and masterminds to do this is because the simplest way is you just keep going to houses until you find an unlocked house, and you just walk in and take stuff. And so, you know, you don't need training in spy school to do that. So that's what Tyson and his friends are doing. They're doing this nonviolent crime. It's very simple. Only in the case of the book, they end up inadvertently stealing something from the wrong person. And the thing they steal contains something that this wrong person wants back very, very badly. And this person wants it back so badly that he's able to hire Harvey and Stems to recover it. And that's why Tyson and his friends find themselves in a position where they desperately need Elvis Cole and Joe Pike.
And, Bob, you keep the reader in suspense about what exactly it is that was stolen. And to the very last few pages, we can't figure it out. Thank heaven Carl is still on the case.
The Carl came through.
The Carl. Well, Bob, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Vic, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, too. I really appreciate it, buddy. You and I go back a long time. So this has become something that I really enjoy doing.
Good, because I hope to do it again. My guest has been Robert Craze. His book is The Wanted, just out, an Elvis Cole and Joe Pike novel, and he's just out on book tour as we're recording this tonight. He's going to be in Pasadena. Looks like you're staying pretty much south of the cold weather from the itinerary I'm seeing here. Oh, no, you're going to New York on January 11th.
I'm going to New York. I'm going to Raleigh, North Carolina for Quail Ridge Books. I'm going to New York where I'll sign at Mysterious Bookshop in Manhattan. St. Louis Library in St. Louis, and I just hope it warms up a little bit before I go to any of those places.
Well, Bob, you just reminded me the last time I saw you was in Los Angeles in 2008, and you were kind enough to give me a ride to Michael Connelly's birthday party, and I remember that Otto was there. Remember?
I'll tell him hello from you.
He doesn't remember me, but Otto Penzler, who's really a legend.
He is a legend.
Yeah. Great memories. Well, thanks a lot, Bob.
You too, Vic. I appreciate it. Take care.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.